Hi, welcome to Outrageous, our bi-weekly podcast where we talk about race, media, politics, culture, and everything in between. My name is Chris, and I'm in D.C. for a twist, joined by my two very best friends who are also in D.C., Trisha and Jason.
We are in the same place.
In the same place
so
at the same time.
So much so that
time.
I can smack your fist. And
yeah, high fives, everybody. Hear that?
That's you go.
We're all in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. Hi, guys. The last time we were all together was like 8 years ago. Is that true?
Damn.
It was more.
You're not very close to your very best friend.
I know. It was 9 years ago. So it's the first time we're in the same room in 9 years, and first time we're doing the podcast in person.
A lot has
so.
Changed in all of our lives in 9 years.
And let's go through it. All the changes in nine. No, I'm kidding. That's not what we're doing.
I mean, I don't know. Like at this moment right now, if we're all in such different parts of our, I don't know. It's like things have changed, but like
you have kids now.
Yeah, you have kids.
That's a big dramatic change.
I did.
Did you say drawback?
Dramatic.
Oh, I thought you said drawback too.
Oh my gosh, Christopher, revealing yourself.
No, you.
I thought I said it. You said it too.
Because we know you.
Yes, and who I will be picking up from school
children.
In a couple hours.
I
so.
Love children.
Yes, as long as they're Jason's.
They're really beautiful children.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. So we're all in town, and what have we been doing up to this? We've been having brunch. Jason went to brunch in D.C.
I don't really know if it was brunch because we didn't have breakfast food. So it was really lunch.
Still, Jason got anxious at the end. Very antsy. He's like, can we go?
I think better said, I punctuated it because I wasn't sure if it was the end and I was ready for it to be the end.
Jesus Christ.
Eat a meal, keep it moving.
What is your deal with just talking with friends?
I'm talking with you now. I love talking with you. I just don't know that we need to
only
be in a
when
restaurant
it's recorded.
And buying more and more drinks. Trisha was on like her fourth soft drink.
I was on coffee, and then I promptly followed up with something nice and cool.
Yeah.
Why were you so offended by my
drink? I wasn't like offended. I just thought it was interesting that you just kept ordering another. It was coffee, and then water, and then ginger beer, and it was like, let's leave before Trisha spends all of her money.
So anxious about brunch. Well, I had a lovely time at brunch.
We also, I think it's worth mentioning, we also last night spent time at this bar that... I think when Chris was here just a little while ago, we basically have found a spot that's like our spot.
Oh,
I feel like a sign is
don't
to be
share
put
it.
Up.
Don't I was going to say it.
Yeah.
Well,
they could be
I
a
mean,
sponsor. They could be a sponsor without paying.
It could also be, you know, Jason's recommendation later for a good time.
No.
I will not be making that recommendation. No.
It was fun, and we hung out with a wonderful friend, Roseni.
Yeah, Roseni.
Hello, Roseni.
Welcome back
so
to
much.
The podcast,
and
Roseni.
My friend Travis. The name of the place is, it's number 9 on
yes.
P Street in D.C.
You just said the place. I thought we were going to say the place.
Well, I mean, whatever. It's maybe
so
now we can get them to pay us. Maybe if you show up there sometime, you'll see the three of us just upstairs laughing and laughing and laughing.
I think we should record there or something.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I don't know why you guys always want to record in public. That's a terrible idea.
I know you don't like it, but we listen to other podcasts that are recorded publicly,
yeah,
and it's a lot of fun.
And it drives listenership, which
there's also
we're
a lot
asking
of crowd
all of you to
there.
Do.
Yeah,
all right,
great.
Fine, whatever. Okay, let's...
such an old man. I just need to be locked up behind closed doors.
I need to be locked
doors.
Up in a place where we can
in my
talk
toddies.
And with my hot toddy and my open robe. Just relaxing. Okay, let's just jump into this today. So today, because we're all together, and because this is, you know, listener, you might have determined that we pre-record a lot of these, but this is our first, like...
recording in
this is our
8 first,
weeks or
something.
It's our first recording in a very long time. And so instead of just each of us doing a topic, we're just going to... We just have, like, hot topics. We're just going to talk about a bunch of different things for a couple of minutes each. And just sort of catch up with the news of the summer. And
that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
Give me time to reflect on all the things that have gone down
all
this summer.
The crazy
yeah, there's been a lot going on.
So this is what I wanted to bring up, right? Because we've already started talking about it, the Ryan Lochte incident in Rio. So
this is the first topic of all the things that have been this summer.
No,
this is what we're starting with.
Because we keep talking about it, it keeps coming up. It's like it's fairly recent. Some of the other stuff is well, it's not as recent, but like so there's all this talk about Ryan Lochte and about how him and two other swimmers were in Rio, and what alleged to have happened is that they vandalized a bathroom, and then according to Ryan Lochte was held at gunpoint and robbed. And this is what I want to talk about, you guys. This is my.
Can we just say though? By now, Lochte it's not just alleged. He has admitted to this now.
However, USA Today did a piece on this story. And what they found out was that, like, one, the bathroom wasn't vandalized. And using, like, the copious amounts of videotaped, like, the video recording around the area, they're not even sure those three men entered the bathroom at all. And Ryan Lochte ripped down a poster, right? He didn't break the soap dispenser. He didn't kick in a door. They didn't do any of that. And it's not clear because of the translation issues that the initial time the story was told that if all the information was correct. So when they pulled the gun, first of all, the gun was not to his head. That much was resolved by the videotape. It wasn't to his head, but a gun was pulled on him.
Because they were in a security guard.
They did turn money over, but it wasn't clear at the time if they were robbed or they were getting or extorted or they were taking money for the damage. The point being, the point that I wanted to bring up was that, like,
I'm already exhausted. I'm dozing off. What are we talking about?
You're an ass.
I know. You're such an asshole. Storyline. Come on.
Damn it.
I mean, very Ryan Lochte of you. Go ahead.
Yeah, extremely Ryan Lochte of you, bro.
I'm proud of all that I have in common with him.
So what is
my point being?
What is your question?
Is that, first of all, one, the USA Today broke a story, which... In what universe does that happen?
What stories are being broken in there?
You know, before the podcast started, Trisha, you called it the disgraced Ryan Lochte. It's actually, I don't know if I feel sympathy for him, but I am, again, with the media running with this story before all the details were in. Like, so now the scandal's happened. He's lost all of his sponsors. He's the disgraced Ryan Lochte. He's forced to go on Dancing with the Stars next season.
No one's forcing him.
Well, you know, also no one wants to go on Dancing with the Stars.
Exactly.
But here he is.
They're forced to take it, maybe.
And I guess my question is about Ryan Lochte, because whatever, he's a dick no matter which way this is sliced. It's just, again, like, journalism is dying. Like, there was a story here, and no one bothered, other than USA Today, no one bothered to explore it. I just thought that was interesting.
What part of it is a story, though? Because, realistically, he told a tale.
He told a tale, that's
he
true.
He told a tale. Mm-hmm. And I think the story is interesting, and not just interesting, but also important, Jason. It's really important because you know what? When his initial tale came out, it lent credence to the idea that Rio was a bloody mess. Mm-hmm. And that the country was a bloody mess, and that they couldn't handle the Olympics, and people's safety were really legitimately in question. Mm-hmm. Because when he initially told the story, he said that they were cops who robbed him. So imagine that storyline then circulating amongst other athletes. How safe do you feel if a cop car pulls you over, holds a gun to your head,
and demands money.
I mean, so in my mind, it was like his story was just compelling enough to fit into a narrative that we had of Rio. Similar to if you were to tell this story about, say, South Central LA, mm-hmm. and it turned out to be completely false. But you can't back out from that. So you've now sold a version of...
So you're saying the narrative
was
dangerous.
It was a dangerous narrative.
But the authorities' counter-narrative was erroneous. And people just ran with that.
Are we sure about that?
Yes.
This is the first I'm hearing about this USA Today.
The USA Today sounds like a mop-up job.
Oh, God.
That's what that sounds
they
like.
They reviewed all the tapes. You can find the tapes online. It shows them walking past the bathroom.
You can review all those tapes because Ryan himself admitted to doing these acts that are now being called into question by USA. Now, whether he's a reliable witness or not, that's left to obviously. But when he was recanting, he claimed that these are the things that happened, which was the bathroom incident, maybe some money with the security
guard. They never said they wanted to go. That was the thing. The authorities, after this whole story, the authorities said, no, you guys vandalized the bathroom. And they were like, no, we just ripped down a poster.
Mm-hmm.
But we ran with the authority story. Maybe because the counter narrative was so powerful, even though it was as false as Ryan's official story.
Yeah.
That's my problem with
this. So your problem is that all stories that emerged out of that incident were false?
I'm just
promising
that, and no one investigated it. Maybe it's what I didn't think about what you said. The idea, what Lochte was saying as far as the narrative about Rio,
mm-hmm.
had to be pushed up against because the Brazilian government was very much invested in pushing up against it at that moment in time. But the story that they came up with was also false. And I mean, that bothers me. Like,
but the only reason why the story was false is, again, because they couldn't rely on the witnesses, which were the two other swimmers,
mm-hmm.
who gave supposedly truthful stories about what happened in contrast to Ryan's.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what you're saying is you can't trust any of these witnesses anymore. You know, it's like, so
including the Brazilian authorities.
No, no. See, the Brazilian authorities took their stories from the two swimmers. They asked them questions about, okay, legitimately what went down. Mm-hmm. And that was the counter narrative that emerged, which is that they were destroying the bathroom.
But supposedly they looked at the video surveillance. And supposedly they did look at it. They claimed they have looked at it.
Exactly. And now USA Today is saying, I looked at... So how much footage are people looking at? I do understand your point. It's a little bit of a cautionary tale because Ryan Lochte is such a douche. Mm-hmm. It might be hard to be sympathetic to him,
but also it's the narrative that this was a scandal and it sold papers and it got clicks and because Ryan Lochte is a douche, you believed it.
Yeah,
and
so your concern is that investigative journalism is not happening the way it is.
I guess on some level, too. Yeah.
It's not happening. And also, on another level, Emily Bazelon was talking about this, how she thought it was interesting. She had made the comparison to, like, when rape victims have outcries.
Yeah.
And then people only pick the details that fit the story, the perception of that woman. Oh, she was drinking. Look what she was wearing. Right. Like, this is similar. Like, Ryan Lochte's a douche, right?
Yeah.
He's a frat bro. So, yeah, he probably pissed on the place and knocked the sink over. Even though none of that was true, like, that's now his story. And he can't back out of it. Even though there's video showing that he didn't do it, that's still the story. I bet a lot of people don't know that he didn't do those things. They'll just assume now.
I'm still not convinced he didn't do those
things.
Look at the power of that, though.
You know what's
so funny? You're saying there's one article in USA Today that claims to refute it. I've just heard lots of other journalists say that they looked into it.
Looked into it? Because when preparing for this, I looked around this morning.
But why was Ryan Lochte's old... See, this is my issue with it, though, is that at the end of the day, you can deny the first story.
Yeah.
So then are you following up with a second lie? Because when he sat down for interviews, why couldn't he debunk any of those things? Why couldn't he simply say, you know what, I lied in the beginning, and let me come clean now and tell you exactly what happened? Which then is what people were using to... create that second narrative was supposedly this video footage that says you destroyed the bathroom, there was a security guard involved, this is apparently now... It just feels to me that it feels weird and convenient that suddenly USA Today has emerged with the true story.
If it was the New York Times, would you be more...
No, because the New York Times is shit.
Oh, damn.
I have to admit, I would be more compelled if it was the New York Times.
If it was the Washington Post,
I would be more compelled.
Take that, USA Today.
I will say, though, if the New York Times was covering Ryan Lochte, I would also be somewhat disgusted by that.
Well, your sense covers everything.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, not every... Okay.
All the things.
Okay. No one covers everything.
But you know what? I will say that is a newer version of it. For a moment, you have me sympathetic to Ryan Lochte the douche.
In wrapping this up, I don't give a shit about Ryan Lochte. Mm-hmm. I really don't. It's just, again, it's the idea that the media ran with a story that seemed correct without actually looking it up or covering their bases. And I see the danger there, not for douches like Ryan Lochte, but for, like, as we've seen, like, with all the shootings that have happened in the past two years with black men, like, it's that same sort of thing, right? They find one picture of you on Facebook where you're smoking weed, and then suddenly you come down the streets, and no one decides to look, okay, well, I guess, well, this is what happens when you're that kind of person. And it's that sort of thing the media is doing, which I think can be, you can blow that past Ryan Lochte, who, by the way, will be fine no matter what happens.
No, absolutely. I mean, the fact that investigative journalism is under-resourced and to some extent it's been co-opted, I think those things are true.
And the fact that USA Today did break this and not the Washington Post, I'm like, come on.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It's just that we have these ideas about these news outlets who are supposed to be doing this sort of thing, like getting to the bottom of things.
But they're not really supposed to be doing Ryan Lochte. Do you know what I mean? I think because USA Today, because that's also the interesting thing, right? Mm-hmm. Is the question of what's important news. Like, yes, this kind of happened as a kind of gossip item that sort of run amok and kind of took over the news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why USA Today can go back and sort of deconstruct what happened and say, hey, this is actually what happens. But, I mean, I don't think any legitimate spaces were reporting the Ryan Lochte story as a real thing, as a real news item that needed to be investigated. It was more gossip that then just added to sort of the salacious storyline that was coming out of Rio.
I feel like there were, because it was during the Olympics and there was so much leading up to the Olympics about can Brazil pull it off and all of that, I do think I at least heard well-respected journalists weighing in on it. Now, I don't know off the top of my head what you're saying, Chris, about like to what extent did they really, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Moving on from to the other Olympic thing that's been happening, Simone Biles, is that her name?
Yes.
The gymnast. One of the Simones.
Who's?
Yeah, the gymnast.
There's more than one Simone.
The swimmer, right?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I wasn't following women's swimming. Am I a bad American?
Yep.
Did we win a lot of medals?
And because that was really important, because she was the first African American woman to win a.
Oh no,
medal.
I just didn't realize her name was Simone.
Simone as well. The two Simones.
The Simones. Like, this was a story. What are you? You're reading USA Today. This is the problem. You're reading USA Today.
I'm reading USA Today.
Not looking at anything else.
That's the problem.
So you missed the whole two Simone story.
So I missed the whole two Simone story.
Yes, two Simones.
Oh, she was the one who was like, they were calling her the new Michael Phelps. Was that her?
Yes.
And she says, I'm the first Simone. Whatever.
No, that was Simone Biles.
Okay, yeah. You know what? So all this is gonna get cut out, and then
I feel like every time you say that, you don't. It doesn't.
I
don't
get cut out.
I listen back, and you're always like, "At this part, I'm cutting it out," and then we're listening to it. So clearly, you did not.
So Simone Biles, after she won everything and was amazing, an 18-year-old Italian competitor who finished 11th. Took to the media to say that the next time that the Italian team should paint their skin black so they can win all the medals too. Did you hear this?
Now, was this a recent story? Because the Italians have done this in the past.
Well, first of all, Italians.
No, I'm not even saying that, but I'm just saying specifically Italian gymnasts have accused American gymnasts of this and using the exact same language. So are you sure this was a new story out of the Olympics?
This is a new story that happened this time. Okay. I wasn't aware that this had come up with the Italians
like,
before.
Like, I think it was at a national championship.
But that really doesn't surprise me.
But it is also the case that soccer games in Italy, when there are black players, bananas get thrown on the field.
That's true.
Yeah.
Not to say all Italians are racist, but it seems like there's an acceptability to anti-black.
Anyway,
I did not say that for the record.
So this shit hit the fan.
Some of my best friends.
Oh my god.
Are of Italian descent.
Oh my god.
I've been there multiple times. I like the country a great deal.
Although you're liable to be mistaken for a prostitute if you're a woman of color. But
in Italy?
Yes.
I don't know that.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah, have you had that experience?
Yes.
Did someone give you money? Did you take it?
Yes. Did you play the role once you were...
Were you like, meet me at the hotel around the corner, then you just ran?
And I've had other friends who've been mistaken for prostitutes.
Really?
Yes.
So there's money to be made, is what you're saying.
Chris is like, I see a pimp opportunity.
I see a drag opportunity. Within the racism of the moment. Okay, I'll make sure.
It's about to racism start paying off for me.
Actually, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, well.
Use racism against itself.
It's Special Investigative Podcast is next. I'm going to pose as a woman of color in the streets of Rome and try and make a buck. Anyway, back to the Italians. The spokesperson for the Italian team had said something. He tried to double down on this.
Ooh, double down.
I know. He was standing by, and he said, Carlotta was talking about what she thinks is the current gymnastics trend. The code of points is opening chances for colored people known to be more powerful and penalizing the typical Eastern European elegance, which when gymnastics was more artistic and less acrobatic, allowed Russia and Romania to dominate the field.
There's a lot in there.
There's a lot in there. And as soon as I read it, I thought about the Williams sisters and how people decry them about changing tennis. Mm-hmm. And just this idea that there's something very artistic and beautiful about white people. And then there's something very like raw and powerful about people of color. And that's a really damaging...
Or what's interesting too, though, let's pull back a little bit, is the idea of whether one is inherently better than the other. Mm-hmm. Because in the statement, he says that Europeans possess certain qualities that were valued in the sport, but is no longer valued. And he's decrying that. Mm-hmm. And then he's making a claim for a new set of values, taking center stage, and boo-hoo, sucks for us, but we're not in that camp. I mean, there's something to be said about that, right? There's a because you can make those claims.
You know a lot about tennis.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know enough about gymnastics to say that there is a trend toward, what'd he say, towards the more
acrobatic, powerful,
versus tumbling, artistic, mm-hmm. whatever that means. It's less artistic now. But in tennis, these same things were said about the Williams sisters, right? That they're changing the face of tennis.
Well, they changed the game because realistically, I mean, it's funny because the game had started to change even with Navratilova because she introduced a level of fitness.
Before that, it was just a whole bunch of pudgy white chicks?
Well, it's not that they were pudgy, but it wasn't the expectation. I mean, this was a country club sport. It wasn't the expectation that you
were... Oh, that you were like an athlete.
Like you were an athlete, you know what I mean? Because realistically, I think they still had to maintain this illusion that they were just having fun out there. Barely sweating.
lemonade but, between
yeah,
every point.
You know, yeah. Like barely sweating. This was just a leisure activity. But I think what you have is a generation of women who came into the sport and like, no, we are athletes. We work hard. We train hard. Our bodies can do amazing things. And we're going to show you that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that the Williams sisters introduced into the sport. They hit the ball harder. They hit the ball faster. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they were the sport was only about brute strength, which is traditionally what they do in their coded language. It's like, oh, the Williams sisters just overpowered everyone. Clearly, that's not the case. There are lots of people who hit the ball harder. Mm-hmm. But it's more than that. It's also between the ears as well. But it was just always really easy to fall back on that trope, which is that black people are stronger. And that just means that they're hitting the ball harder. And the game is suddenly...
And it's getting less... It's less elegant.
Well, those terms are currently used against the Williams sisters, too. They will say that. Like, it's so nice. Somebody said that about the recent French Open champion. Garbiñ Muguruza, who's a Spanish champion, she hits the ball just as hard. But it was really interesting to hear people refer to her as elegant. And she is the most clunky tennis player. So you really knew that elegant was just like a code word for white mm-hmm. or European. You know what I mean? Because in many ways, Venus is in some ways more elegant than she is. And so, you know, so it's just these ideas are sort of like coded words for the fact that my sport is being overrun by more superior athletes.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting like with... tennis or track or whatever, like it is. I feel like gymnastics unfortunately opens up a space where you can always make an argument for subjectivity because it's judges assigning points. Whereas in tennis or track, even though these terrible things are being said, the Williams sisters beat everyone. Like, there's no whether it's because they're hitting the ball hard or they're elegant or whatever. Like, bottom line is they're winning at the sport, and you can't say like, well, they're breaking the rules or. You know, it's someone else's fault. In gymnastics, unfortunately, you can say, oh, they seem to be overwhelmed
taking
by these black...
For this.
Yeah, exactly.
But I also think it's just also... They're also kind of knocking American tennis. Not American tennis, but American gymnastics.
Well, I think that quote you said... I mean, it was the Italians. He was, I think, saying... Basically, he was saying we get screwed either way.
Yeah.
Because the Eastern Europeans are seen as more elegant, so we lose to them.
Yep.
Now, the Americans and the black gymnasts are, whatever he said, more athletic and less artistic, or more acrobatic and less artistic, and now we still lose. I mean, it was a total sour grapes. Like, we just can't win because they always like things that we don't do.
They're so black. All right, well.
But it is also a question of standard. I mean, it's a question of standard in any sport, mm-hmm. and some standards can lead to preferential treatment for certain types.
Sure.
You know, because the other thing is...
What are you saying?
But just look at it. Overwhelmingly, American gymnasts now have to be younger and younger.
Yeah, they're like, what, embryonic?
Yeah,
now?
They have to be young. No, but I mean, they tend to have to be younger and younger. Their bodies are stoutish, because it is part of that parcel of what makes... for good scoring now, and it attracts a certain type, whether it's about black or white. I mean, you don't even have to go there. There's also, they're just knocking American gymnastic tradition now, mm-hmm. because Shawn Johnson was that way. Mm-hmm. A lot of sort of recent American champions were that way. It's more egregious because they like, we need to paint our skin black.
Yeah.
But that tradition has been growing in American gymnastics. You know what I mean? It's been growing that way. Yeah. The Svetlana Boganskaya, which is the long, lean lines, the Nadia Comaneci. I mean, that's a certain body type, and they couldn't accomplish some of the moves that no younger, squatter bodies can. Mm. That's just the nature of the physicality of it.
Now to succeed in women's gymnastics, you have to be like a toddler. you have to be like 3 feet tall and 170 pounds.
Well, right, because back in the day, you saw those contrasting videos of like gymnastics 20 years ago.
Oh, I love those pictures.
You saw those pictures, but think about those women were in, some of those women are in their 20s. So what you what a 20 year old woman's body can do versus what a preteen or it's different. So clearly that's going to impact the scoring of the sport, you know.
Jason wanted to follow up about the story about Georgetown that we talked about like months ago.
Yeah, I had brought up this story that I had seen about the Jesuits running Georgetown in the 19th century, having sold slaves of theirs to Louisiana to try to get out of money woes, which they failed to do. But they had been given assurances that the slaves would be treated well and taught Catholicism, and neither of those things ended up happening. And so what was interesting then is at that time when I brought it up, what that article was about, there was a white Georgetown alum who was actually pushing for this to be recognized by the university and some kind of reparations made. And now a story, I heard an NPR story yesterday that that's actually happening, that Georgetown is going to, I think, erect like a monument of some kind, and they're talking about financial reparations and that kind of thing. So I thought that was very interesting that has progressed, that story has progressed in a direction that I think we were probably saying it should have.
But actually not financial reparations, because there was this conversation I saw on Twitter. I meant to kind of follow up but wasn't able to, that it isn't actually reparations, it's actually legacy. So if you can prove that you were a descendant of those slaves, you will get some form of preferential treatment, similar to sort of legacy preferential treatment in the application process, which is different, which somebody, and you know, I think I saw somebody tweeted opportunity versus actual cash are two different things, right? Mm-hmm, so it's like, we're going to get access to the university, right? But we could probably have translated this into cash, you know, into real palatable cash in your bank account.
What if you don't have the money? If you get in but don't have the money, then it's not even the opportunity.
It doesn't even really translate into an opportunity.
I don't know how to feel about this. Like, is this a good thing that Georgetown... This is a good thing, right?
I think a part of it is a good thing. I think it's a part of... I think it's always important when an institution acknowledges its historical beginnings.
It's truth and reconciliation. Yeah. I mean, it's just a part of the process of healing and moving forward and...
Yeah.
But these reparations that they're preparing...
But they're not...
It's not reparations, to be
clear.
It's
merely, somebody said, and I think so they were right, affirmative action is really what it is.
So in some way, like, that feels really, like, limp-wristed to me, you know? Not in a gay way, but in a weak way. That just seems like...
I think it's inadequate.
You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like...
It's a step one.
If the president had just apologized, acknowledged the past, and then moved on with business as usual, I think in some way I would have preferred that than, like, this weird, weak... Oh, I guess if you can prove that you're a descendant, we'll give you some sort of, like, kickback. Like, now it just... Wait, now you're giving me fucking work? Now I gotta go to Ancestry.com or whatever? You know what I mean? Like, it just... I don't know.
Well, it's one step better than another thing we've talked about, which is the Princeton University thing, which was like, well, we thought about it. We're not going to change the name of the school, but we're going to talk about the fact that he was a nuanced figure. Like, thanks. That's helpful.
Wondering. I bet you they also are leery of creating... what do you call it? A precedent.
Precedent, yeah.
Of creating a precedent. Because just think about Chase Bank, for example.
Let's.
I mean, if Chase Bank needs to take
if
a look
anyone
at...
anyone needs to pay reparations.
Yeah, and also just anyone in the banking industry. Yeah, yeah. Anyone that sort of built their wealth around slavery.
So many industries. Like the tobacco industry. There's so many industries that this should all be paying out. But the thing is... Well, that comes back to the idea of reparations and paying out. Like,
yep.
I just don't know what that would look like in our modern age. If we want institutions to start taking responsibility for their past, I just don't know how you bring that into the present and the future. Like, cash settlements? To who?
Why not?
Listen, I'm not saying that it's a bad idea.
Legacy.
I'm just saying, like, I don't know how you...
Let's get those genealogy charts started. And that and create a whole cottage industry around that. Think about that.
I think you need to find, and I don't know enough about the details of this situation to propose any approach to this, but you need to find a way. There's got to be some method to it. Because I think what you said about precedent, I mean, that's a real thing. I mean, you could imagine that, I'm just going to throw this out, someone, you know, in the 40s is able to say, well, my, you know, parent applied to Georgetown, and because they were whatever, Chinese, Jewish, whatever, mm-hmm. they didn't get in. Like, it does create a slippery slope, and so I'm not against the cash settlement idea, but you have to have some method of, like, quantifying what were the damages, what is an appropriate amount to pay at this point, given that.
Yeah, I don't know what that would look
like. I think that's why this case has been so successful in some ways, in terms of, because the university has real hard figures.
Right, that's right.
There are records that really. There are real records about what happened. You can talk about the value of that money now. I mean, essentially, the university would have closed. So they know that it's an effusion of, I don't know, I can't remember the figure, but say $500,000. They know what that looks like. And so they can actually really deal with that. I think a lot of places, they don't want to do that work to, first of all, decide how much money came out of this scenario. Although I bet you, if they were going to get that money back from the government, say, Institution A needed to calculate it and make sure the government paid them. I'm sure we could figure it out really quickly.
I'm sure they can figure out how much money.
So, I mean,
they could figure out how much, like, the buildings were built, like, how much they have to pay those workers and adjust. Of course they can figure that out. Please. We've got records in this country going back to, like, the 16th, 1700s. Like, and when it comes to money, people kept track of shit.
Well, I think we should, with that in mind, we should just take a moment to, I think, really acknowledge and...
To pray.
Yeah, with you too. That's gonna get me.
You know, I've got a reputation something of being anti-religion. Because I'm not your at all. Me.
No, I can point to specific comments both of you made that were incredibly.
Cue the clip show.
I'm not religious, but incredibly, I will say, insensitive to religion. But anyway, yeah, exactly. That tone was exactly what I'm talking about. I think though the fact that there were people putting pressure on Georgetown and exposing this story, and now there's been at least a step in the right direction. I think we should look at that.
Is this the right direction?
I think it's the right direction. I don't think it's adequate.
What resistance are you feeling inside of you?
It just feels lame to me.
What would have been better given the specifics of this situation?
That I don't know. I just can't critique it without
just want to
complain. Just complain. Would you like us to be quiet for a few minutes while you complain? What else would you like to complain about, Chris?
I just feel like, okay, fine. So... Georgetown, this is the same thing as Princeton. Georgetown, like, slaves built that institution, right?
They owned slaves
who were doing service for the university, and then they sold them because they needed the money. They were going bankrupt.
Okay.
That's more specific than the Princeton incident.
It's named after somebody who
had really egregious views.
And policies.
I don't know what I want. I don't know if I want cash money given out to people. I don't know if any African American whose family goes back more than four generations gets in free. I don't know what they want, but I just think what they arrived at is probably very workable from them from an economic and academic standpoint. But it just feels kind of, I don't know what I would have wanted.
You know what I was thinking, though? I was thinking that people are always saying, and I say people, when I say people, generally the complaint is go back to Africa. Mm-hmm. If you have a problem with the United States, go back to where you came from. Mm-hmm. I think when things like this emerge, I think it's a real compelling case for the fact that African Americans built this country. Mm-hmm. And that things were traded on their backs. Mm-hmm. I feel like that education... I don't want it to stop, though. Like, I want other institutions to begin to explore. Agreed. And ask them. Because if we can make this more a part of the public dialogue, mm-hmm. about sort of these major institutions who essentially survived because of free labor, mm-hmm. then this notion that, first of all, African-Americans are lazy, African-Americans have contributed nothing to this country.
If Africans were lazy, there'd be nothing here.
Exactly. But you see, like, to be able to sort of offer as a counter these examples, these clear examples that African-Americans built your institutions, mm-hmm. physically and the fact that they were worth things. Yeah. You know, so I feel like they built
the goddamn White House.
Yeah, because didn't someone legitimately say on TV, I think it was like a surrogate for the Trump campaign, that if not for white Americans, we mm-hmm. would have nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, they are responsible for all progress. So I feel like these kinds of things directly contradict that.
Fair enough. I agree.
And I want us to begin to have those conversations publicly. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually really appreciative that they are starting that dialogue. Mm-hmm. I just wish that maybe that's what I would have rather they do, is create a space on that campus where other institutions get to take themselves through that process.
Oh, I like that.
That would have been really fun. Because that, at least, it's an educational institution. We have found that this has been our legacy through slavery. You are now, we're going to do that for other institutions.
I think you brought this up the last time we talked about this.
I would love it.
That's a great idea.
Well, and I would say, I think it's great. And I would go a step further and say, institutions, how they benefited from slavery is really important. It's also important to look beyond slavery.
Yeah.
To talk about other things that are generally said. I mean, I feel like I hear a lot like, well, slavery was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, well, yeah, maybe you can make that argument. If slavery had ended and then African-Americans were treated completely equally in our laws and our practices, then maybe you can make that argument. The fact is, post-Reconstruction with Jim Crow and housing policy,
yep,
and we could go on and on. And institutions have benefited from those things as well. And
yeah.
I mean, most of these institutions have had explicitly racist or racially discriminatory admissions policies. And so it'd be great if I agree with you, like, had a public dialogue about all of this. And just to have that in the public consciousness more, that there's a history that did not end when slavery ended.
Mm-hmm.
Of racially oppressive and discriminatory policies and practices, I think would be helpful.
Or maybe they could have facilitated the pushing through of that law they've been trying, the reparations law, to just do the research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, establish that institution there, that institute there, and make that your research. Like, that would have been really great, actually.
It's not too late.
I just don't want this to become like a singular incident.
Agreed.
I agree. I wanted to talk about Andrew Weiner.
Oh, Weiner.
Yeah.
Weiner.
What should we do about him? Like, can we send
him just
somewhere?
Can we just ignore him? I think the greatest punishment, and what I would enjoy most, is to just forget that he exists.
Okay, but can we have a conversation about sexual depravity?
Oof.
And the intersection of it in the public lives of politicians. This happens a lot. Now, is this a set issue?
This is not sexual depravity.
It is. Okay. But what? But sexual deviant. I don't even call it. I don't know if it's deviancy.
It's not deviant. It's just
he's really
sex.
Just cheating, right?
He's just tweeting pictures of his dick.
Okay, but. The other thing I want to know.
Yeah.
Is what are we to. In relation to Weiner. What association do we need to make between your sexual activity and your ability to do your job?
Zero. Unless you're a sex worker, your ability to, or your proclivity to have sex has nothing to do with what you're doing.
So then why do I need to take this seriously?
I'm not saying we do.
I mean,
I don't think we need to take it seriously. First of all, he's not a politician.
Well,
he was on the rise.
That's his whole
point. He was and he will be.
Yes, and he's a part of a political landscape with others, right?
I suppose.
But I think, first of all, I mean, I think the way there was an intersection here originally was that he was using government property on government time to transmit these pictures. Now, this was years ago. I'm not talking.
He's using
about
like
most
his phone.
This is the first time he was doing it while he was on.
It's fine, but we've litigated all that already.
Well, we've litigated, but he has chosen to stay in the public eye.
Yeah.
Not to say it was a unilateral decision, because lots of people have been more than happy to keep him in it, like documentarians and journalists.
Mm-hmm.
But he has chosen to do that. He's chosen to continue to be a talking head on certain shows and that kind of thing. So I think he's chosen to stay in the public eye. His wife obviously is in a high-profile job with a presidential candidate. So do I think that the sexual nature of this behavior that we're seeing now says anything about his ability to do his job? No. But I don't think there's any avoiding this being in the public conversation. Like, this, he's chosen to be a very public figure. This stuff has gone public for him in the past, and...
Well, why can't we dismiss it like we dismiss and encourage each other to dismiss bad kids?
What?
Like, for example, bad kids of, say, like a politician has a bad kid. We're often okay saying, well, you know what? Leave the kids alone. This has no reflection on my ability to do my job because maybe I was a poor parent. Or we don't seem to feel like it's okay to go down those roads. Why do we have to make these things a part of the public conversation about a politician. I mean, I get it that it's a shorthand because it's easier and it's more salacious and we don't want to talk about policy. But really, you know, I think the day this story broke, I think Hillary was doing something fairly important and releasing some sort of policy paper, and that got no news coverage whatsoever. And we spent our time talking about Wiener. And well, I mean, like,
literally and figuratively. But, you know, so I was just sexier. Like,
I mean, I guess sexier. It's sexier, but on some level, I'm always like, I get that it's sexy, but what?
And there's no sum of the noise. Like, it's just sort of like, oh, it's just never ending drumbeat of like sexual scandal after sexual scandal, and none of it means anything. Who gives a shit if he tweeted a picture of his dick? Like, you know,
I mean, this is important because apparently the son in the picture. That was, I think, the most egregious portion. The son is right there.
Yeah, so you, if you're listening, you can't see this picture, but you can Google it. I just did a quick Google search for wiener pics, and I had to get to the second page to find this. But
I think if you had said Anthony Wiener
pics. Yeah, I just did wiener pics, and I got a whole different thing. So it's a shot of him with his kid, like, next to him, I guess.
Your background work, is that cause for danger for that child?
No.
Not for him, obviously. He's not doing anything with his child, but his child is in a picture that he's using to essentially try to get some sex act going on.
He was sending sexy pictures to some...
But his child is in the picture, and now the child is in the... You know what? They're just lucky that they've actually...
Pixelated the face. I don't think it's
dangerous. It's just... I mean, again, does this have to do with his job?
Is it inappropriate and immoral?
It really seems immoral and inappropriate. I mean, it's gross.
Who gives a shit, though? This is the thing. This goes all the way back to the Lewinsky scandal. Like... Do I care about this? Like,
no, it's
different. He's not an elected official.
Lewinsky scandal.
Oh,
well, she was an intern working at the White House, and she was young.
Yeah, so she was over the age of 18.
Yeah,
but okay. She was an employee,
and
it's just. And there's an assumption that maybe there was a power differential issue there. People didn't know. I mean, obviously people were like, well, we can assume that she was fine with it, but we don't know those things because it sets you up for a sexual harassment claim where the power differential is clear. It's the president. Could you say no? Yeah, I don't know. That was always the issue in that
It's an abuse
space,
of power.
Right?
This is not. No, do I care?
This
no.
It's actually even more simple than the Lewinsky thing because he's just sending text women across the country.
It just reinforces for me that I wish we didn't pay him any attention.
He's a total asshole, but I just don't know. I brought him up because I guess my question is, I don't know why he's in the public eye.
It's sexy and people love a scandal.
Like, she married this guy, and now she's got to deal with him. I don't know why I have to deal with him.
Well, you know what's been interesting? I mean, what's interesting is we had a conversation about this in my office. And, you know, because someone had watched the documentary about him, mm-hmm. and was wondering why is she still with him, right? And the next day the story breaks after she finishes watching the documentary.
Pushed her over the edge.
Yeah, but what I thought was noteworthy was this notion in the documentary that in his case it seemed like he was courting a scandal because his political rise was sort of almost overwhelming. So it's almost self-destructive. And then I started wondering, okay, I was like, I wonder if that's why I'm seeing this trend with politicians. Like, I wonder if this is some sort of...
Like self-sabotage.
Self-sabotage in the masculine arena, right? Because I do think it does turn out to be stars in their party. There are all these sort of weird things that are happening. And I mean, obviously, it's not to sort of drum up sympathy for him. Mm-hmm. But I'm just wondering if this is some sort of strange coping mechanism for people who are in these spaces where they are rising political stars.
And they want to take themselves down, but
the environment creates a space where they kind of want... It's overwhelming. We talked about this in our last... I think in our last podcast, or two podcasts ago, when we were talking about the political climate, the current culture for someone who wants to succeed in politics and all that's required, the pressure, the constant vigilance on your behavior and every aspect of your life, and whether you feel suited to that. I think sometimes these people take themselves out of the game by having self-destructive behavior.
Or this is normal behavior that's only put in high relief because of who these people are.
That's what I was wondering. That's
what
I was
asking. Millions of men
are
sending sexy pictures around, and it's of no consequence because their wife finds out, then they go to counseling or they don't, and everyone moves on. But we're forced to deal with this.
Is it millions are doing that?
Well, I don't know, millions.
If you think about all the shit that people get caught doing and you hear about it,
What's like, all the shit that I don't that. Hear?
And you know what I'm saying? It's all the people who aren't famous or notable that you don't hear about. Look,
I have my vices. I've never felt the desire to take a picture of my genitals and send them to anyone.
Whatever your desire is, though, if you were a public person, right. It would be blown up. No, and the agreed. Point is, it's like, agreed. You know, porn is huge. It's the only thing the internet's for, if you look at numbers.
Yeah, that's
right?
true.
Yeah.
So, outnumbers everything.
Yeah, absolutely everything. By, like, 3-1, mm-hmm. the next biggest thing, which I think is probably more porn. So, like,
but do you notice that every technological innovation, it is sort of the sex arena?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
With photography, the Polaroid, the first thing they took was a naked woman.
Snapchat.
You know, first thing is probably a penis.
Snapchat. Like, I have Snapchat on my phone. People are like, oh, you're sending dick pics? I'm like, you don't have to send dick pics on Snapchat.
Well,
but that was the first thing it emerged as. Like, oh, yeah. I can send dick pics and no one's...
It just tells us maybe that we, no matter how far we go, we are never far from animal nature.
Right, we're always back to the origin.
Newsflash, people like sex and they want to do it and...
And they want to watch it, and they want to...
They want to watch it, they want to talk about it, they want to tweet pictures of their penises or whatever.
Yeah.
Which, in this picture, Anthony Weiner, okay.
So there's nothing more serious about it. There's nothing more serious or useful about this controversy beyond just, it's annoying.
Well, I've heard people make the point, and I think it's valid, that the New York Post actually posting the picture...
was inappropriate, right?
Yeah, and that
why?
Arguably damaging to the child.
Because the son was in there. Because every single time the son's name comes up in the future, you can do a search and that it will be the picture. That was the suggestion. Yeah. That's going to be his introduction.
Sure.
Even the posting of the picture, I think you could argue, like, why? I mean, New York Post, not known for its...
I was going to say, I mean, if we just want to slam
subtlety.
The post, I'm down for it.
Yeah.
Is this picture newsworthy?
Hamilton, right? Wasn't it founded by Hamilton?
No.
I think it was.
Oh, gosh.
Is that in the play? Is there a song about that?
I haven't listened to the whole thing. I don't think so.
If it's about slamming the New York Post, I'm down. But is the picture newsworthy? Yes. Yes, it is.
But you can write an article about the picture without posting.
Which immediately begs the question. Well, you say the son's in the picture. Let me look at it and determine if it was a sexy picture.
No, I mean, you could write about it even without the sun in the picture.
Yeah, you could. You could write it without the picture.
Just, you could not mention
why
the sun.
Why couldn't you just describe
just
the picture?
Because the idea that the sun is in it, I'm looking at the picture, and it's like, okay. But when you say that, oh, he treated a sex picture with his son in the picture, that immediately conjures up something.
Yeah.
So in some ways, it would probably be better for the post that they didn't post the picture, because then people would be like, they'd be left to their disgusting imaginations.
I don't know.
I guess it would have gotten posted eventually. Eventually. No matter what. It's too juicy.
There's like a lot of political topics I want to talk about. But before that, have you guys heard about this story about the South Carolina town that has been overrun by clowns?
No.
Is this real?
True story. Ready?
Ugh.
There's this town in South Carolina, right? Where there's been reports of clowns like... by the edge of the woods, like trying to lure kids
I've
in.
I've heard about
by like showing
trying
them
to
cash
steal kids.
And stuff. Yeah. No, they're not even trying to steal kids. They're just hanging around, like.
Well, why are they
waving
luring
to
kids?
People? I don't know, but
that was how you introduced it. You said they're trying to lure kids.
The kids have said that like they'll be in the woods like showing them like cash, and the kids are like, "What the fuck?" And so they don't go over there. But there was
maybe
like,
if candy was being shown.
Maybe.
Cash
well,
seems more
look,
egregious.
It's 2016. These kids. Cash.
Yeah, what
cash
about
is
candy.
King.
I want money to
cash
buy
cash is king.
More. At least candy seems like harmless. The cash is probably the thing that makes the kid go, what?
But anyway, yeah, they're so anyway,
what?
I just thought.
Why is this even a thing? I don't get it.
I want to know more. You think you don't want to know more about these clowns? Why are they in the woods? Why are they?
Well, I'm glad it looks like they haven't gotten hold of any kids.
Kids,
so.
Yeah. That's I mean, I'm glad
maybe
we
they give them the money.
I don't know, but I'm just happy that no kid has gone with the clowns.
Unless they were paid off.
I'm just saying, like, I can't believe one savvy kid wasn't like, that looks like a lot of money.
I love how you keep seeing opportunity.
I think the
thread today is
I'm
Chris
very
is like,
scared by
in
that
every
idea.
Scandal, I see opportunity.
I'm just saying.
I'm going to go be a drag prostitute.
I'm going to hire child actors to go and split the
money
with the kid.
The clowns.
I don't like it.
Yeah, let's see what happens. Anyway, that was the most pressing story of the summer that I was thinking of.
You should not.
Who are they? What do they want? I Where do they come from?
Next summer, Trisha, would you curate the summer Hot Topics news?
Yeah, your Hot Topics news has a lot to do with
All right, ours. Well, let's get to the topic that everyone likes to talk about. Trump.
No!
Well, you brought it up before, so now you have to talk about it.
We did a good job of not... We have not mentioned Trump this whole time.
You mentioned it earlier.
Oh, she did?
What? Yeah, she did.
I don't remember.
She just... we were in the middle of saying something. She just went, Trump! Trump! I don't remember.
Wait, while being recorded?
Yes.
Oh, I missed that. What?
You now succeeded in tuning out the word Trump.
Yeah, I don't even hear it anymore. Who is that?
So okay. Trump, what is everyone... Okay. Everyone has something to say. Don't you have an opinion. So let's just get it
So the
there.
Recent trip... I actually wanted your opinions on this.
Here we go.
The recent trip to Mexico, I saw a headline that said the Mexico got played. Explain that.
No, I can't.
Because I think I can.
I have seen headlines that said every single thing about that, what, six-hour visit to Mexico. Like, it... The
no, but I mean,
a field day, and none of it makes sense.
Well, this is why when I saw that, because I thought Trump got played in my mind, in terms of whatever he wanted to say, and then the switcheroo, and then the switchback. I don't know; it was very muddled for me. So tell me, what do you think?
Well, I think a lot of his supporters, they believe, and he has certainly said that he can make a deal with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
He can be presidential, and he can get better deals for Americans, and so. He went to Mexico. He looked presidential.
According to them, yeah.
He didn't offend anyone. And then he came back and said his same stuff. And I think that looks like someone who could maybe go make a deal with someone, pull a deal off, and then come back with a good deal.
But he didn't do any deals.
He didn't do a damn thing.
Well, he's not president yet, but I think...
But you couldn't, as a private citizen, he went as a private citizen.
He went as a presidential candidate.
I know, but he went as a private citizen.
Yeah, but
so
I guess
he could have negotiated something. He could have negotiated a golf course.
Isn't that his whole thing?
Yeah, like
that he's a negotiator.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think so. What would it have looked like if they hadn't got played? I think it would have looked like.
What does it mean that they got played?
Well, that's what I wanted
Mexico
to know.
Left
what
this
is
claim.
Mexico got?
Trump showed. If only they got played because Trump came into their country.
No, but he utilized their highest officials.
Basically got to meet
to
the
look
pres-
presidential
yeah,
for his campaign.
By standing next
that,
to him.
I mean, that's what he did. And so what it would have looked like if they hadn't, and I mean, I'm not saying I think they should have done this, but I think another thing is if in the press conference they could have said, we reiterated that we will never pay for a wall
and we
still object to the things that he said about Mexico. They didn't do any of that. They gave him the chance to look like a president who just visited a country and had a bullshit press conference afterwards.
And why couldn't they? I mean, the other thing is, why couldn't they have refused him?
Well, because he might be president of the United States.
Exactly, right? So it's like, in some weird way, by just, it's like this, it's, it was an odd collusion in that moment. I don't remember a presidential candidate going abroad.
Oh, Romney, remember? Romney went to London and said the Olympics weren't
ready. Oh, well,
and
yeah.
And then he went to Israel and said, because of your culture,
that,
you're doing better
but
than
that
Arabs.
That was such a misstep.
It was.
All of these presidents, anyone that's ever done that, it came across as
right.
a misstep.
So arguably, Trump did it right. He went, he kept quiet while he was there, and then he came back and said his same spiel. He fed the red meat to his supporters.
Which was like, I guess if you're selling yourself as somebody, like, I mean, because to my mind, doesn't that seem duplicitous? Like, I'm going over here and I'm going to compliment the Mexicans. That's what he did. He spent his entire speech while he was there and saying the opposite of what he'd been saying while in America. Then he comes back and then repeats every single thing.
This aligns with, I think all the polls of his supporters say they don't necessarily think he tells the truth. They don't necessarily trust him, but they... They're not bothered by the duplicity. I mean, he's been duplicitous the whole...
Yeah.
And their point is, he cares about us. He'll go make deals. I think the duplicity with his base is an asset. Because they see it as someone who could go get stuff for them that other politicians who stick to talking points don't.
So then if duplicitousness is an asset, why do they hate Hillary?
Mm-mm.
I mean, you know what I mean? If
the alarm has gone off.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
Too
it's
much,
only
you've made too much sense, only, Trisha.
Well, the other part of this
is because
that
she
I think,
has liberal principles that people are skeptical. Of.
Okay,
also,
so they don't.
She's a woman,
and she's a woman. She should have said that first.
Well, I think in some people's mind, duplicitous woman is like an oxymoron.
Oh dear,
same.
That's true.
Anyway, but the thing that I thought was intriguing though is that he actually ended up losing the few connections he had with his Latino surrogates. They felt played.
Oh, that's interesting.
I thought that was weird. They wanted to quit, or they said they were going to quit. I don't know whether they ended up doing it or not.
I didn't hear that, but it makes sense.
They thought that he had pivoted. And so when he went there and said all those things, they were like, okay, we might be able to get on board. And then he goes to Arizona and I think delivered a speech that everyone who's sane is calling hate speech. Mm-hmm. And they now are the ones that are played, the Latino surrogates. So it's like you had four or five Latinos with you. And mm-hmm. now you basically now have two.
Yeah.
And the one that has two, essentially, the two says, what do you want? Mm-hmm. But he knows, trucks on every block?
No. He knows he's not getting those votes anyway. I mean, you know, I feel like...
Well, you can't win the presidency if you're not going to get the Latino vote. You can't.
But that was the thing. And that's why even the legitimate part of his party was trying to hold on to that. Pivoting. But so that's what was so strange about the Mexico trip.
I don't think that's true, though. I mean, I think his calculation... I'm not an expert on these things.
Well, I am, so go ahead.
But I don't think it's true that you can't win the presidency without the Latino vote. I think...
You need a good chunk of it.
I don't think you can
You need at least a minimal bar. Like,
There's a lot of Latinos here and a lot of red states. Like, if... Well, I mean, well, actually, well, now that I say that...
My understanding, what he's trying to do right now is there are groups that Republicans typically get that he doesn't have, right? So there's like college-educated white men, there's white women. I believe his calculus is if he can get those people over, which arguably should be less of a reach than getting Latinos, given the things he's said, that he could win. So I think that's who he's speaking to.
Well, apparently that was supposed to be the push this past week, right? Or the past 2 weeks.
Yes.
His push was supposed to be for the college-educated white person who's uncomfortable with the idea that his supporters have been tagged racist.
Yeah.
So by saying that he's actually reaching out to blacks and Latinos, that was supposed to make that group feel.
That's what I've heard. That's the theory. They don't want to be associated with racism.
Yeah.
And so if they hear him say things that are more racially sensitive, then they'll feel comfortable enough to vote for him.
Racially sensitive to say, "Hey, black people, you're getting killed left and right. Vote for me as your last ditch chance."
I mean, for a white person in a white suburb that's not around a lot of black people, that sounds a whole lot better than some of the other things you said.
Yeah. Well, so that's so weird, because would that mean that they're acknowledging that Black Lives Matter is a real thing? And that this is Trump's solution to that very challenge?
I mean, I think, again, we're speculating here, but like, among a lot of white, particularly college-educated people, and this is something that probably changed in the past 30 years, they don't want to believe that they're racists. And I think they've seen the videos a lot. I think there's been some white public outcry about some of the most egregious slayings by police of black people. So I think there's that sector that's like a center-right kind of...
Something.
Jeb Bush, right? Like, I mean, I'm white, I'm college-educated, I believe we should be offering solutions to people of color. I think there is... And those are the people Trump doesn't have. And softening his speech in some ways might get them in the tent.
Which is so interesting, because essentially then those people want Trump to talk about black people but actually not talk to black people.
Yeah, because he's not going to get the black
But I mean, what I'm saying is, like, if you're saying you're doing black or African-American outreach and yet you're not going into any African-American spaces, how can those people comfortably...
That's a nuance beyond, I think, the...
Wait a minute. So let me tell you something. So you basically just want to hear something, but you which belies exactly what you see. If you are a suburban white person who college educated, suburban person, suburban college educated white person who might want to vote for Trump, but you're really uncomfortable with the idea that he's a racist,
right?
And so then Trump says, I'm pivoting and I'm going to really reach out to the African-American Latino communities. But I have no Latinos around me, necessarily. I'm not talking to any of them. I'm giving a speech and none of them are around.
The question,
you're a college-educated white person and you want to hear a particular rhetoric about Latinos and black people.
It's like, what's the threshold?
But you're a college-educated suburban white person. You don't actually want to mix with Latinos or blacks.
Well, and you may not even have a sense of, like, was he in a black church? Like, the barrier to entry, that's really the question. And that's the question I think Trump is dealing with. What is the threshold that will bring those people in? And there's some level of nuance that he doesn't need to get beyond. And that's I don't know what it is, but
no, I mean, I think it's a challenge. But I mean, I guess, you know what? I would hope that white, well-educated suburbanites could see through that rhetoric.
I think a lot, walking back what I just said, I think there's a lot of white, college-educated suburban people who have issues of diversity in the mind, either for them or for their kids and the world they're going to grow up in.
Yes.
But I think there's also maybe an equal number of white people who don't want to believe that they're racist, want to believe that they're of the 21st century, but don't necessarily need to have any interactions with Latinos or black people. They just want to make sure that they're on the right side of that rhetoric.
I think that's exactly
right. And so they want to make sure that Trump is on the right side of that rhetoric. So when they say they vote for Trump, they'd be like, but he says that he likes Latinos.
But what,
I like them too. My cleaning lady, okay. You know, I leave the envelope for her once a week.
So you're not going to be taking social cues from the fact that no black person or Latino
of course
person
not.
Is voting
because
for
there's a sizable amount of the country who actually doesn't know or see any or have any meaningful conversation with black or Latino
and
people.
So the numbers don't mean anything.
Yeah, not at all.
So hearing that 90%, that 97% of black African Americans are like, no.
Well, no, because I think you can rationalize that and say, well, the Democrats always get the black vote.
Yeah.
And
okay,
Hillary
yeah.
was in Obama's okay. administration. So, of course,
and what are they complaining about? Trump already said that, you know, what do they have to worry about? That, you know, it's all about the rhetoric. No, the white people that you're talking about are already woke in a particular way. But those are not the ones that we're addressing. Those are not the ones that Trump is addressing.
He's just addressing the ones that are
yeah, Trump's not going to get those.
Trump lost those white people.
The ones that even have black friends.
Yeah. Okay. He's lost the white people who look around their kids' school and be like, wow, there's only two people of color in this entire school. Those white people are not voting for Trump because they're already aware of that. It's the people who live in those all-white communities. You know, think about that picture that Paul Ryan tweeted about the intern class.
Yeah.
Do you think anyone in that room looked around and was like, oh, we're all white in here? No, they just looked around and like, oh, we're all normal in here. Like, this is a normal-looking room. Those are the people that Trump is trying to appeal to.
And I'm really, really comfortable.
Yeah. So.
So did you think he made progress?
This
week in terms of his goal for this week, because it changes next week. Did you think this black outreach and this Latino outreach moved anybody?
As we talked about, like a particular kind of former Bernie supporter.
A certain type.
Yep. Uh-huh. Because you want to, we've all seen the articles around the internet like, I'm white and I want to vote for Trump and here's why. Those people are removed so they can comfortably talk about, you know, Trump came off as a hard ass, but listen to how he softened. He's reaching out to the African-American community. He's going to visit the president of Mexico. See, he's not a total racist. Otherwise, he wouldn't do those things. Just like me. I don't know any black people, but I like them generally. You know?
Those are the people that are generally confused about how Hitler came to power.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, all that said,
I'm curious.
I mean, I haven't seen any evidence as to whether it's worked or not.
I'm curious.
It's hard for me to imagine that the past week is going to move a large number of people. I personally still think...
I don't even know. I still don't know how Trump works. I don't know if it's going to move people or not. Because like Trisha said, it changes from week to week.
But his my understanding, and I don't claim to be an expert, his base that he had through the primaries has been pretty solid. I don't know that he's added much to it. Period.
Okay, so what do you think about this idea? And I don't remember if this is something you wanted to cover, Chris, but what do you think about the notion that the news is sort of hampering the voter by making this seem like more of a horse race than it is? That's been a shade of news coverage that I'm starting to see. Because they're trying to sort of drag Hillary down. That's the contention, is that the media is trying to drag Hillary down and create false equivalencies with Trump to generate the sense that there's a real tug of war and that there's actually a real race happening.
I
agree.
See,
what do you think?
I just feel like the media, they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. And they've been that way the whole...
Kind of,
You know, there's been so many allegations against the media. And if you listen, both sides, Clinton supporters, Trump supporters, have so many complaints, and it was the same with Sanders supporters, about the media. And they're just stuck between a rock and a hard place. I mean... You know, you could argue they give too much airtime to Trump, but then it's like, well, his hateful ideas, people should know about them. And then you could argue that, like, they give too much, you know, the false equivalency argument. But, you know, Clinton was being investigated, like, possibly she wasn't in the end, but she may have been charged. These emails keep coming out. There was some pretty, I don't mean to make a false equivalency, but the stuff with, like, the DNC and those emails they got linked, I mean, that's not necessarily a reflection on Clinton, but that's some bad. So I just.
You don't mean to, but you're doing it right now. Hillary Clinton, for all of her faults and foibles, is a serious political candidate.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is an ass clown. But and the idea of putting them, discussing them in the same conversation as we're all doing all the time, I can't tell you how many different shades of wrong that is.
He's the Republican nominee. You can't just say, well, we're going to ignore him because he's an ass clown. The press, their job is to report the news. The news is that he was nominated.
But the question, though, is how do you report his speech in Arizona? First, you have to report it as what it is. It was hate speech. It didn't have any policy goals in it. So that's the thing. They're saying that when you're covering it, you're not covering it in the way that says the purpose of a speech is to do this. As the Republican nominee, this person needs to be articulating blah, blah, blah,
but
blah,
that's
blah.
Not the media's job to say what the Republican nominee is.
Well, but the media's job is to report content.
But I think they've reported the content, and I've heard commentary from them about
it. No, they're talking about the content I find this really frustrating.
Because
it's okay for you to use those language to refer to Americans, to people who live there?
But a media always has a choice about what they want to present. For every story that we hear, there's hundreds of thousands of stories that we don't hear. For every talking head that gets on TV and is sanctioned in some way to speak, there are hundreds of people who are not allowed to speak. For everything you're allowed to say on TV, there are a thousand things you can't say on TV. So those choices are made every single day. Right? So it's not about like, oh, they have no choice but to cover Trump. I don't have any sympathy for the media. They can control the message. That's literally their entire job. The fact that they're holding him up and making this false equivalency with Clinton just shows like just how far we've fallen as a media environment. Like, we can do better.
I think to say they make a false equivalency, it's a very difficult thing to support because you're talking about a multitude of media outlets.
Okay, let me ask you a question right now. Could Donald Trump have given that press conference and said all sorts of things about Jews, about how they're greedy, about how they're shiesty? How would that have been reported? As straight-faced as all the shit that he says about Mexicans? Or are you not allowed to say those things on TV?
No, it's true. There's a bipartisan...
This is my point.
There's a bipartisan agreement that you can't say stuff about Jews.
So that's my point. My point is that we don't have that agreement across the board for a lot of things. When Kanye West says that he was going to run for president, we took that seriously for about 30 seconds and then moved on. But somehow Donald Trump has turned that into a months-long adventure.
He got votes. First of all, he ran, which West hasn't, and he got votes. If Kanye West ran and actually showed up in polls, the news would be all over it.
But it shouldn't be, because it's not.
But you could argue
what the media should be doing.
Even if
and
you
I know
hate,
about shoulds, I'm just saying.
But even if you hate Trump, you can argue the other side. And people do, which is that if you don't report on this stuff,
yes,
then people run the risk of electing this guy without having read all the crazy shit he said.
But when they report on it, they're giving it credence and legitimacy.
Yeah, and they need to define the crazy elements of it.
They don't.
They don't challenge any of his
crazy claims.
They pretend
like his ideas have intellectual rigor.
I disagree with that.
Oh,
oh
no.
My God,
but
Jason.
Maybe it's where I'm getting my news. I get my news from certain places. If you're taking news from CNN, MSNBC, but see, those are mainstream. When we talk about mainstream news, this is what we're talking about.
Okay,
and mainstream newsmakers, your 6 o'clock news, your 6:30, those people, it's their job to challenge the content of what you say. Like, that's why I do think there is something very valid about this notion that the media is pushing a horse race. Like, it's closer than you think.
Well, it's in their
interest.
You
know, it is
in their interest.
You know, I mean, it's like a show where you know that one person's dead last, but I'm supposed to sit around and try to care and get. And I get it. Listen, I don't want anybody to get lazy. I want people to go out and vote. But I do feel like the equivalence, if people don't know that the content of what he's saying is, first of all, somebody said, guess what? Everything he said in his speech, it's illegal to do. I mean, just even saying that.
I agree with that.
Even just reporting it that way. Like, Donald Trump in a speech today said a string of nonsense and illegalities. Like, just reporting it that way.
No, that's true.
He said we're going to build a wall and incarcerate people. Let's look at the history of when... What? There's no history.
Yeah.
He literally just made that up.
That's true.
And now by examining it, you're inviting other people to examine it, and then
it makes his voters think that they're actually legitimately voting for those things. So to be able to say, you know what, it's illegal to do that.
Yeah.
You'd have to have this constitutional amendment.
Yep.
And many of his ideas require those things. I mean, that's why Bernie got shot down. You have to raise taxes to this amount. Do you know what I mean? Like, they did that with Bernie's ideas. I think it's so interesting that they were like, half of these things are impossible with Bernie and the way they talked about him. Mm-hmm. And they could do the exact same thing with Trump. And they have never done that. Almost as if they're pacifying this freaking population who's so excited by Trump. And it's like, guess what, people? None of those things are constitutionally able to... You're not able to do it.
This is what we brought up in the last podcast. This was my topic about the media. And they need to take responsibility here. Because you cannot look at Hillary Clinton and look at Donald Trump and be like, this...
That's a fair point. Every sentence that he says should be evaluated as, is this possible or not, or what would this actually take? I totally agree with that.
I mean, if they just... If articles began with prolific liar, Donald Trump today said...
See, that's where I...
Does he lie? Does he lie often? So he's a prolific liar. The media that is fact-based.
Never calls anyone a prolific liar.
But you know what? They could.
It's what I want,
if you were a serial child molester, they'd say serial child molester, so-and-so-and-so.
Someone could make an argument that...
But you know
that
what,
he's not lying?
No, that Clinton is a prolific liar.
Well,
yeah. And that's not at all. What is she lying about? The difference is what she's lying about.
I agree with that. You know that's why you got to stay away from terms like prolific liar.
You can't use liar.
All right, fair.
Well, enough.
Since we're
fair
on
enough.
Politics, I wanted to talk about the sudden end. Right, oops.
But you know, honest to goodness, can we, before you go on, I was just thinking about it yesterday, and I was like, gosh darn it. Would Bernie have been a better choice
than
to go
Hillary?
Up against?
No. Because your boyfriend is done. Stop trying to resuscitate him.
No,
but
I'm
that's
not.
What the polls showed that he had a better shot of beating
Trump. The polls did, but I don't know. You know what polls are.
2020.
I know. But there was a part of me that's like, this damn thing about the false equivalency around Trump and Hillary in terms of their character, it's really freaking annoying. And you really can't push back on that story. There was never going to be a point where anyone was going to be convinced that Trump and Bernie were in the same league mentally.
That's
Do you know
true.
What I mean?
That's true.
But somehow or another, because of, first of all, her gender, which means that she's inherently unfit. Mm-hmm. So you're starting there.
Right.
And so, you know, a woman plus Trump, he's already got the man thing. So he's got plus one. And then because they both have, like, character flaws in people's mind, so now that's a draw.
Right.
Do you know? So now they're... So it continues to create a sort of sense of level playing field. Do you know? Yeah, yeah. Whereas with Bernie, I wonder if it would have really demarcated the fact that Trump just didn't even belong in this race. Which, at the end of the day, just basically confirms sexism. Because the only reason why Trump is even, like, a compelling figure is his penis.
Is a woman running.
Yeah. Yes, it's the only way.
No, it's not the only reason.
I mean, it's not the only, but it's a compelling one.
Agreed.
Do you know what I mean? It's like there's a real reason why. I mean, look at how he wants to prepare for the debates. I'm just going to see what I come up with. And she might be studying. But how characteristically, perfectly.
And somehow she'll still come up looking unprepared.
I can't wait for the debates because I'm fascinated to see
the apologies.
There are two people who talk on such different planes,
and they're going to think,
"How is that?"
You know what? They're going to say they're going to use every. Let me. Can I just predict it?
Go for it.
Think about every interaction you've ever seen between a too smart woman, and I'm using too smart deliberately, and a dim man. Who emerges out of that situation with the public sympathy?
The man.
The dim man.
And that's exactly what's going to play out.
Because, oh my God, I can just see the words used next day. Oh. Henpecked, strident, like all sorts of things.
Yeah. Her smartness,
aggressive.
All the things that you were
She's
supposed to
be
using.
Hustle. Shrill.
And it's frustrating because everything that you want in a presidential candidate in that arena, she's going to demonstrate completely, and then she's going to get beaten for it. She's going to be knowledgeable. And they're going to be like, oh, look at her making him look like a fool. You know, the whole... I mean, it's just...
Can I just say one last unrelated thing before we move on from this? So I was having dinner with some friends. And friend of a friend was saying, like, how... She wasn't a Trump supporter. But she was saying something about, like, how Barack Obama was a good candidate because he didn't have a lot of experience coming into the office. And I said, please, for me, list three other professions where you would prefer someone with less experience over someone with more experience. Like, how about your gynecologist? Would you want some 16-year-old kid? I was
right,
like, your Uber driver? Like, your dentist?
But
there's nothing, there's no other office where you would
but
have someone.
For better or for worse.
Experience means
corruption. Or experience means beholden
to
interests.
That's upsetting.
But you know what? That's a fatal flaw and a fatal equivalency that has defeated politicians since the beginning of whenever. Probably Nixon. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's when there's like a rise in general cynicism towards politicians.
Well, that was a disastrous career. Decade for U.S. presidency.
Exactly. Yes. Holy shit. It was a mess. No, I don't know if we've ever recovered from that.
I don't think we have. I think it goes beyond presidency. I think the anti-authoritarian strain mm-hmm. in our society that even in my opinion affects how people parent.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that, the Nixon scandal drove.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get really depressing and talk about the world's sudden lurch towards the right in both Europe and South and Central America. Like leftist populist governments are being thrown out in favor of like these more dictatorial sort and hard right sort of leaders and environments. And you can say that's what's happening with Trump and the alt-right here. So I just want to throw that out and say, like, you know, how many years do you think we have before we have a full-out race war here?
You know, ironic.
Two, three.
No, see, it's ironic that you ask this question.
Oh.
Because that would be a worrying occurrence in general, right? This mm-hmm. notion that we're moving to the right.
It is a worrying occurrence.
Worrying occurrence.
That's a weird phrase. Worrying. Worrying occurrence.
It's tough with the R's.
It's the worrying R's. It's too many R's going on.
A worrying occurrence, if you will.
Right. Now, do you believe that there's also kind of like, I'm even leery of saying it out loud.
Sounds exciting.
A psychically charged
Jesus
shift.
Fucking Christ. Miss Cleo's dead. I don't know what you're trying to do here, but I'm not interested.
Well,
wait, what? I just got lost.
You know what?
What just happened?
Why? You know why I'm bringing this up? I had this conversation about some Jungian collective unconscious bullshit. Well, kind of, right? I was having a conversation with Rossini, and not to say that it was Jungian at all, but you know, this is how growth happens, right?
Wait, I don't know what you're going to say next.
What is what are we signing on to?
You know, right? Painful things. Growth is painful. Right? The fight and the move to the right, I think, is necessarily I wouldn't have welcomed it, and I don't want it, and I don't want it to continue. But I do think it is a rallying cry, if not a wake-up call, for people to define who they are, what they stand for, and to ask some really tough questions. I'm hearing people say things out loud. We've just had the Trump conversation.
You sound like Trump right now. No. I'm hearing.
I know.
People
but I'm
are
hear-
saying
no,
that they
I
want
know.
Me to speak three times at the convention.
I know, right? No. But I'm just hearing people having to confront biases that have been implicit for too long.
I think that's true.
Do you know? And so when you go to the right and there's a platform suddenly for these wackadoo ideas. Like, for example, you've been reading about the alt-right, you said. Mm-hmm. Those ideas don't get visited because they're so incomprehensible when you look at when you pull them all out together. But you know they've been embedded in people's ideas around dinner tables. All of those things are there. Maybe this is time for us to talk about them explicitly.
I agree with that.
Do you know what I mean? And so we can like kill. I mean, this is what people want.
Let's talk about them. Let's not elect them to office.
No, I know. But I think that's something that didn't happen with Brexit. They coded it.
Go on.
They had coded language around Brexit, and then people voted and like, oh, shh. You know what I mean? And I think that's why people have been saying, you know what, I really want Trump to lose badly because I want us to take a look at these ideas in the face and say, no, we reject you. We wholeheartedly reject these ideas. We wholeheartedly reject this notion of citizenry in this way, immigration in this way, blah, blah, blah. Let's no longer just play with these ideas and these kind of weird coded words. Let's just hear you say these horrible hate speech that you just did. Mm-hmm. And let's just turn around and say, we reject that wholeheartedly. Now, what if we don't? That's also just a clear indication of what the hell is going on and what's in people's hearts and what they've been hiding. Maybe it's like we've been afraid. You just said something this morning. You said, you know what? I don't want to leave dark spaces unexamined.
Yeah.
Maybe the alt-right and all of these things have been dark spaces that have been unexamined for too long.
So agree with everything you said.
But it's scary as shit.
Well, and what scares me is that... So you have people who've been identifying with the alt-right. My understanding, a very small group of people. And yet, we have this presidential candidate who's aligning himself with many of their views and attracting a lot of people that didn't even know about
the alt-right. Yep.
So that's what... I'm all for examining. What worries me is the credence and the momentum behind some of these ideas. And I think this question of, like, you know, is the whole world moving to the right and what does that mean? It does appear that the whole world...
It's not a question.
Yeah, so the world's moving to the right. And I mean, if we look outside the United States for a second, I mean, there are these... I think there have been, arguably for about a century, there were a lot of countries that moved to the left. Including this one, if we look at, like, if we're going back to, like, post-World War II and, like, the New Deal, and, I mean, the United States moved to the left, and, you know, a lot of European countries moved to the left, and China moved to the left. You know, there are these questions that I don't think we've been able to answer yet, which is, like, A, can you have, like, a really leftist or socialist economy and society without totalitarianism? I think that's a question that I don't think we have an answer to yet, and I think, unfortunately, a lot of the leftist countries had totalitarian governments that were oppressive and repressive, and so that helped to bring down the leftist experiment. I think you have a question of whether you can have a leftist country that has a swarm of immigration, and we're seeing that, like, really, that question's in great focus right now in Scandinavian countries. So I don't know what my point is, but I think
do you think we have to experience the right before we can reject it, like we had to experience the left and it was rejected?
That's a good question. I'm not
willing.
What are you willing?
You were fine with the left, even if it was oppressive?
When was the left oppressive?
It wasn't in this country, but I mean, Cuba, Soviet Union, China.
Oh, I didn't live in any of those places.
Vietnam.
I mean,
wait, then why did you introduce world?
My point. Well,
you said the world.
Like, I just mean, like, the world's moving to the right. I don't live in any of those places, right?
Had bad stories.
There's a lot of bad stories.
About it.
I don't know. I'm not willing to... No, I'm not willing to... Have you all read Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine?
Yeah.
I've read parts of it and I read it cover to cover.
Oh my God.
Who could? It's freaking, my God. Like, why don't you just wanna, kill, like, yourself?
Throw yourself out the nearest window. You open it, you're like, nope. You just open the window and jump right the fuck out. And, like, so I don't want to have to experience the right...
Why would you have to? Because her shock doctrine was happening the whole time. This is the other thing, too, right? I mean, I hate to say it, this makes me really uncomfortable, but people were saying, okay, listen, you look at Trump's mass deportation ideas, and we have a lot of deportation happening.
Yeah, Obama has been the most deporting president that we've had.
So maybe it's not explicitly stated as unattractively as he's doing it, as Trump has stated it, but it's actually happening. And Shock Doctrine, which is a scary as hell book, but definitely read it, she's not talking about something that's predicated on the future. She's talking about things that are happening now.
Yeah, and she's also not, if I remember correctly, it's not just the right that does it.
Yeah.
Like, both sides.
Yeah, both, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean...
It's opportunism, basically, yeah, it's which both sides are just as
guilty. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I'm legitimately nervous, but at the same time, I think we can also soothe ourselves by thinking that the very things we fear aren't really happening.
I just don't know to which degree we have to invite them in to determine if they'd be good house guests.
I mean,
we can see them coming down the road.
Well, that's been my problem with it.
And
I mean,
they're trashy and messy, and we're like, nope, not in our house. Why can't we just determine that from here?
Well, what I would rather we say is, I would rather us not dismiss it and say, oh, well, this is not happening. I'd rather say, listen, these guests have appeared in our home occasionally, and some of them have lived here, but we don't want 10 of them. We're fine negotiating with the 2 and the 3, because at least we can acknowledge their egregious things happening. I don't want us to create this sort of fantasy that if we fall down to this far right world, that the world will change in ways we've never... We're kind of comfortably doing some elements of the things that Trump has been saying. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I just... But I'm generally an optimistic person. Generally.
Generally you are.
Generally I am. So I'm hoping for the best.
Leaving it there, let's skip ahead to recommendations. Let's do some media recommendations. So this isn't something that you've seen, heard, or experienced. You think other people should see, hear, or experience. Who has one?
I'll go.
Yes.
Last weekend, I watched the movie Spy with Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, wow.
I had not seen it. I figured it would be a fun movie to watch. Mm-hmm. It so far exceeded my expectations. I thought it was brilliant. I thought everyone in it was brilliant. I loved it. So if you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend it.
Damn.
Oh, and we didn't talk about the most prescient topic at all.
What?
The flag cap issue. Sitting down while the national
Copernic.
Copernic
issue.
Yeah,
that was on my list, but we didn't get to it. Do you want to recommend people research that?
Well, only I recommend that people read the Intercept article about
Colin Copernic. Colin Copernic, which is such a fun name to
I know.
Say.
Colin Copernic and the national anthem, and sort of a history of the national anthem. It's actually very fascinating. So just look up Intercept and national anthem, and it's a really interesting piece on the third stanza and what the national anthem's all about. That's the most interesting thing I read all week, actually.
I don't have a media recommendation. I'm going to be really honest. I don't.
What?
I don't. So the
why don't you name one of the articles you had up there that
well,
we didn't talk about?
That's the thing. So when I was looking, preparing for this podcast today, I was looking for like hot news of summer 2016, and like you know, like hot stories, hot topics to discuss.
God, you're like ready to be like a radio, like one of those guys. Like, there's a show coming up this weekend. Yeah. It's gonna be hot.
It's gonna be hot, hot, hot. Well, what I found was that like a lot of American sites were like listing things like the U.S. election right alongside with like, you know, who's Johnny Depp fucking? Like, that was like a hot summer news. Except I stumbled upon this Canadian site.
Oh, Lord.
Where they were talking about the hot summer thing or things to watch in 2016. And the fluffiest thing they had in their top 10 list was that the Queen was turning 90. The rest of it was like
deadly,
interesting, interesting conversations about economics, South American politics, and a whole bunch of other stuff where I was like, wow, when Canadians search hot summer news, they're getting actual news. Meanwhile, I'm just learning about which celebrities put hiding it in which other celebrity. Just goes to show you, America, a country in decline.
No! It's not even
but
a hot topic.
America.
Oh, that's a mess. That's a mess.
Oh, my God. Let's get together and do this once a month.
Oh,
Trisha,
yes.
Just fly in from L.A.
Yeah.
I will.
Okay, great.
Just making so, a monthly I'm thing. I love it.
So, everyone.
Virgin America can make it happen.
Are they a sponsor now?
No, they're not. But
that would
good.
Be great.
Fly Virgin America. All right, guys. Until next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.